The Theory of Sexuality by Sigmund Freud. Author's Preface to the Third Edition. After watching for 10 years the reception accorded to this book and the effect it has produced, I wish to provide the third edition of it with some prefatory remarks dealing with the misunderstandings of the book and the demands, insusceptible of fulfillment, made against it. Let me emphasize in the first place that whatever is here presented is derived entirely from everyday medical experience, which is to be made more profound and scientifically important through the results of psychoanalytic investigation. The three contributions to the theory of sex can contain nothing except what psychoanalysis obliges them to accept or what it succeeds in corroborating. It is therefore excluded that they should ever be developed into a theory of sex, and it is also quite intelligible that they will assume no attitude at all towards some important problems of the sexual life. This should not, however, give the impression that these omitted chapters of the great theme were unfamiliar to the author, or that they were neglected by him as something of secondary importance. The dependence of this work on the psychoanalytic experiences which have determined the writing of it shows itself not only in the selection, but also in the arrangement of the material. A certain succession of stages was observed, the occasional factors are rendered prominent, the constitutional ones are left in the background, and the ontogenetic development receives greater consideration than the phylogenetic. For the occasional factors play the principal role in analysis and are almost completely worked up in it, while the constitutional factors only become evident from behind as elements which have been made functional through experience, and a discussion of these would lead far beyond the working sphere of psychoanalysis. A similar connection determines the relation between ontogenesis and phylogenesis. Ontogenesis may be considered as a repetition of phylogenesis insofar as the latter has not been varied by a more recent experience. The phylogenetic disposition makes itself visible behind the ontogenetic process. But fundamentally, the constitution is really the precipitate of a former experience of the species to which the newer experience of the individual being is added as the sum of the occasional factors. Beside its thoroughgoing dependence on psychoanalytic investigation, I must emphasize as a character of this work of mine its intentional independence of biological investigation. I have carefully avoided the inclusion of the results of scientific investigation in general sex biology, or of particular species of animals, in this study of human sexual functions, which is made possible by the technique of psychoanalysis. My aim was indeed to find out how much of the biology of the sexual life of man can be discovered by means of psychological investigation. I was able to point to additions and agreements which resulted from this examination, but I did not have to become confused if the psychoanalytic methods led in some points to views and results which deviated considerably from those merely based on biology. I have added many passages in this edition, but I have abstained from calling attention to them, as in former editions, by special marks. The scientific work in our sphere has at present been retarded in its progress. Nevertheless, some supplements to this work were indispensable if it was to remain in touch with our newer psychoanalytic literature. Vienna, October 1914. 1. The Sexual Aberrations. 1. The fact of sexual need in man and animal is expressed in biology by the assumption of a sexual impulse. This impulse is made analogous to the impulse of taking nourishment and to hunger. The sexual expression corresponding to hunger not being found colloquially, science uses the expression libido. 2. Popular conception makes definite assumptions concerning the nature and qualities of this sexual impulse. It is supposed to be absent during childhood and to commence about the time of and in connection with the maturing process of puberty. It is supposed that it manifests itself in irresistible attractions exerted by one sex upon the other, and that its aim is sexual union, or at least such actions as would lead to union. But we have every reason to see in these assumptions a very untrustworthy picture of reality. On closer examination, they are found to abound in errors, inaccuracies, and hasty conclusions. If we introduce two terms and call the person from whom the sexual attraction emanates the sexual object, and the action towards which the impulse strives the sexual aim, then the scientifically examined experience shows us many deviations in reference to both sexual object and sexual aim, the relations of which to the accepted standard require thorough investigation. 1. Deviation in reference to the sexual object. The popular theory of the sexual impulse corresponds closely to the poetic fable of dividing the person into two halves, man and woman, who strive to become reunited through love. It is therefore very surprising to hear that there are men for whom the sexual object is not woman but man, and that there are women for whom it is not man but woman. Such persons are called contrary sexuals, or better, inverts, the condition, that of inversion. The number of such individuals is considerable though difficult of accurate determination. 3. A. Inversion. The behavior of inverts. The above-mentioned persons.